Oppositely, you are Winston Yordan from Grid Cars, who are the pioneers in this space, the giants in the South African automotive industry when it comes to
the suckers
charging.
The ones who decided to jump into this before it was
your words, not father. Mine. And if you, what you were watching was my Winston's response to my question about why we don't use credit cards when we tap to charge our infrastructure. And as you were saying, Winston, it's a case of, well, there's a whole bunch of barriers to that, chief of which are, one, you don't know who the customer is that's tapping, which is correct. Fine with me,
yeah.
But the reason it's important is because
When somebody's having a problem.
Yeah.
So if it's somebody that's struggling with the charger, or, for example, we can see somebody tapping on a charger where we then realize that there's a problem in that area, that the power's going to go off in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, now I could phone you and let you know this, which might be a lifesaver for you at that point. And I think the idea is that with a modern system like this, what you're looking for is something that fits in with the more modern lifestyles that we have, with things like apps and how those apps connect. I mean, you're not tapping your credit card in an Uber.
No.
You're loading your credit card on a system, and yes, it's making a credit card payment, but it's sort of fitting into the modern world.
You can use your credit card to make the payment into correct. The grid car system.
There we go.
So absolutely. That's part of the explanation as to why there is a bit of frustration, I guess, between if I'm using a grid car charger, I'm using the grid car ecosystem. If I'm using a Rubicon charger, I'm using the Rubicon ecosystem, to name one of your competitors. Sorry about that, but you know, there we go. We're an open platform here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that as a consumer, maybe a bit of a frustration for me, but you know, more of a frustration is not being able to charge at all.
Yeah, but again, it shouldn't, as a consumer, it shouldn't be a frustration, because in theory there are full roaming contracts between those systems. So in the same way that you would go in your banking system, that you would go and draw money from a different ATM to what your bank is.
Yes.
That doesn't work by magic. A lot of people sort of may believe that, you know, there's some magic in the air.
Well, I thought there was a little magic pixie banking theory.
There you go. So what's actually happened is there's a contract in the background between the different banks. That's called a roaming agreement. It's typically administered by a group called BankServe, or you might see it as Sasswitch with the sticker on the things.
We've heard about roaming before. Yes. It happens in the cell phone industry.
Same challenges, sure. Same thing. So wherever you have isolated networks of anything, whether it's isolated networks with banks, cell phones, charging, those networks need to be aware of the other networks. And if I want to authenticate on your network needs to be confident in two things. One, that there's money in my account, and that the person who's controlling that account can be trusted to pay the money to you at the end of the day. Because think about the banks. If you're drawing money out of an ATM and you're drawing from, let's call them Bank One. So you're drawing from Bank One where you are part of Bank Two. Bank One is giving you the money at that point. They need to be confident that Bank Two will give them the money.
Sure.
Firstly, and secondly, that there's actually money in your account physically. And that's what the roaming systems ultimately do. They allow the back end of the platforms to be able to talk to each other. So in South Africa, there are some non-compliant charging things, but let's just say it's as low as 5 that are not compliant. And I mean 5, like physically 5, out of the 650 charges on the road. The rest of them are all on the roaming platform. The billing systems work between that. Again, there is a threshold to be a billing system in the same way that there's a threshold to become a bank. It's not as complex. It's nowhere near as complex. But you need that threshold because there's got to be a level of certainty that if my payment system is used, I'm going to get paid.
What is interesting about this is that you know, putting in a charging infrastructure, the actual physical charger, and working out how much power it is and where to plug it and all that, that's the easy part. So it's the back end part of it that you're absolutely describing that comes into the fore that really sort of kicks in and makes right. these things complex.
Yeah. And I think that's where, if you look at what we've done as Grid Cars, you know, we started developing that system in 2010. Remember, in first cars arrived.
I wasn't even born in 2010, Winston, for goodness sake.
So the first cars arrived in 2013. So just to be clear, that it was well ahead of that time. We understood what was happening in Europe, and we started building internationally compliant systems that follow the best practices as to how you should approach this.
Because, of course, it's all pioneering at the moment. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And that system in the background is what we see managing all of this. Great thing, locally developed. It's not a overseas product that's been brought here or white-labeled. It's a locally developed product that we've built in South Africa.
Well, as we know, local is lacquer. The cell phone networks did exactly the same to the enormous benefit and international expansion and what have you. I mean, that's great. I love the South African can-do attitude. And
can do, will do, in spite of.
Exactly. To hell with whether it works financially or not. But you're still standing, so I mean, you must be getting something right. And in that, I mean, let's talk about, I mean, you know, I had to eat my hat the other day. I haven't physically eaten it, but I will at some stage. I can take a lot. It was never going to be profitable.
Can get that on camera?
Well, and they've turned a profit, so I have to eat humble pie. Well done, take a lot. I'm a fan. But you guys must be going through that sort of long ramp up to the turn where you're starting to make this thing make financial sense. And is there a number of charges out there that you have as a target that would, you know, is your comfort level that, right, now we got this thing, let's go?
Yeah, you know, I've always, from the early days, so I haven't really changed this number. And if I look at where we are now, where it looks as though we're still on track for that, we've always said that for a CPO to be profitable, you'd need around 1,000 charges.
A CPO being a
charge point operator.
Charge point operator.
So, so you'd need around 1,000 charges. Now, that was structured in the early, when we started looking at the numbers. You know, I did what any businessman would do. I won't say good businessman.
And you gazed into it.
Oh, there we go. How did you know that?
Done it myself.
No. So what we did was we had a look at what the European markets were doing. Okay. And we could see what they were charging for these services. So what they were billing these services at. We then looked in South Africa and we said, right, if we had to do a similar service. Now, remember, one of the things we have is we have a 24-hour call center. You know, that team is seven people just to run a 24-hour call center. It's not one person with a phone. It's a solid team behind it that will at any point in time, we will pick up the phone and talk to you.
You can 2 o'clock in the morning. Entire grid. You can monitor your entire network from
absolutely.
One point.
Yeah. And so based on that, we looked and said, if we have these cost bases, this is the minimum we need.
Yeah.
And if that minimum cost base, and you take into account the desk and the person's space and the office and the rent, and you put it all together, it comes and you multiply that by your numbers, what the things are. So in the beginning, when we started, we had 10 charges. That was a huge amount of money that we would have had to charge per customer.
Sure.
So we looked at that and we said, well, is it reasonable of us to be charging a customer, you know, 2,500 rand a month to monitor their charger? Or should we be at the European pricing, which mapped into South Africa was around 200 rand a month? So that's the game, 200 or 2,500.
Yeah.
And we then look and said, right, let's pitch at the 200 level, but that would mean we've got a loss point to carry to hit a target.
Yeah.
And that target still to us looks as though it's around 1,000 charges.
Okay.
So if you want to build a successful CPO, you're either going to have to charge a lot more than, you know, what we typically charge in, or what you're going to have to do is wait until you get to those numbers. And we will get there. You know, if you take it a 20-to-1 ratio on cars.
Well, it's, yeah.
You know, we're expecting long-term for there to be 500,000 charges in the country.
So 500,000?
Yes.
Okay.
11 million vehicles. So 20-to-1. More or less there. So it was my math wrong.
11 million vehicles is the entire South African park, right?
Yes.
So, and that's aging, you know, so it's getting older and older because, you know, we've got less money to spend on new cars and less money to spend on EVs because EVs carry a stupid, and I've repeated this point, ad valorem tax over and above every other car of an additional 7% that I think is hindering adoption of EVs in South Africa. We're one of the few countries in the world.
Is normal across all cars, by the way.
Yeah,
it's not special for EVs.
But the 7% over and above.
7%, but only for European cars, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that it's an EV. It's just to do with how the trade embargo or trade deal was set up with the European Union in terms of how that comes. So your vehicles coming out of the European Union pay 7% less, whereas America and China pay the same.
18-25% import tariffs, correct?
Yes. Only for European vehicles.
Correct.
Not for Chinese vehicles, not for American vehicles. So there we would pay the same as a fuel vehicle.
In terms of the adoption rate, we'll come back to that because I disagree with you a little bit there, but that's fine.
That's good.
In terms of the adoption rate of EVs into the South African market, in your numbers – where you started and gazed into your crystal ball and saw where this was going. How's the adoption rate progressed in terms of where you estimated it being and where it's actually gone, and where do you see it going So yeah. That's a big question.
No, absolutely. So the first time I did this was probably around 2012.
Yeah.
So if I compare to those, we're probably 5 or 6 years behind where we should have been. You know, so we were anticipating us to be around 2018 or so.
Yes.
Around 2016, I made a new prediction on our side, and we're at most a year behind on where that is.
Okay.
So we've been relatively close to where that is.
Revised and adapted.
It was pre-COVID that we made that revision. So, you know, taking a year knock is probably not the end of the world. And it was looked at a relatively slow growth and looking at where the rest of the world was growing. Looking today where the rest of the world is growing, I think we're under. So even though we're behind on it from a numbers perspective now, I think the rate of growth over the next 3 to 5 years is going to be way bigger than what we've projected. I think we'll be at more than double in the next 3 to 5 years to what we have projected.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I think we're now at the point where, firstly, the technology is at the right price. It's hitting the point that
everybody always kept saying
it's got to be under 500,000. There's now quite a few vehicles under 500,000, multiple brands.
Correct.
So I think we're now going to start to see that first turn. Secondly, we've seen how fast the rest of the world has moved on these things and where those benefits are. And I think that is going to become desirable for South Africans.
Well,
we need to have that too.
The small kerfuffle in the Middle East and the direct correlation with the number of searches on Autotrader for EVs is undeniable.
Absolutely.
It was 400% more than it was before.
Exactly.
And every single decent value secondhand EV that was for sale is gone, much to my bitter disappointment, because it was a little nice Volvo I had my eye on. Next day, just disappeared.
Unfortunately, so, I think bad news travels more effectively than good news. But I think we've got to start to see the good news stories also driving that type of message.
It certainly now set a narrative inside the consumer's head that EVs are a viable option. Now, maybe we should actually have a look at them and not say V8s for everybody forever.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that there are numerous overstated reports about how Porsche and Ferrari and Lamborghini are all pulling back from electrification and going the V8 route, they're not really actually going more hybrid. The electrification side of things is still happening, just not at the pace it would have been. But the point of the matter is that the electric is not going anywhere. I mean, I think the days where you have a straight V8 or a straight V12 are going to be very, very small markets.
My late dad loved collecting old 1930s cars. Everybody's going to have this sort of thing. Maybe you're going to. So the V8s will become the collectors, and we'll move on. We'll move on to a new, modern, better technology. You know, so if I looked at all the cars he used to collect, none of them had fuel injection and all these fancy technologies that make cars more efficient today. He was quite happy to waive that and say he doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to him if the cars are much less efficient, not the modern technology. You know, whereas the modern cars are there. And I think this is all the electric is doing. It's just bringing the next generation of where this technology is going. Some adopters will adopt early. Others will become collectors. You know, at some point, everybody will see the light and we will move in that direction.
Literally. It's a strong statement you say that we're going to see out performance in terms of growth coming off a low base at Rios. I accept that's a distinct possibility. What implications is that now for the charging network? Because, you know, it's a case of it's chicken and egg now, isn't it?
Yep.
So chicken being the cars, egg being infrastructure to charge them, and a lack of charging infrastructure is always cited as a reason not to buy an electric car.
Yeah.
I have to put that one to bed straight away, because for me it's a case of I'm happy to drive the exactly 5.5 kilometers from my house to the high-speed charger, which is one of yours, at a hotel just down the road from me. Okay. Safe, secure, can get there any time of night, and generally it's unavailable, and it's a 90 or 100 kilowatt charger, so plug in. Literally, I charged the Alpha from, I think, 90Ks to 260 in 15 minutes, 20 minutes. It was quick.
Just
charged.
You know. Yeah.
And that for me is a coffee break. So it's not an issue for me. And of course, you just trickle charge it at home.
Okay.
So that works.
So can I ask you a question? We had a little short discussion before this outside of the studio.
Interviewees are not allowed to ask me difficult questions. So I'll answer if it's an easy one.
Do you have a charger at home?
No, I do not.
Well, there's our problem.
So we were getting to that. I have one coming in because my solar system is being installed as we speak, and it will have capacity.
But I think this is the thing. We talk about this as chicken and egg. You know, without mentioning names, I was told a few years ago that that there's no such thing as chicken and egg. There's just lazy people. So, the theory is quite simple, and that is that if you believe in your heart that there's a chicken and egg scenario, the question to ask yourself is which side of that equation can you see? So where can you drive the technology forward? In our case, that was simply put charges down.
Yeah.
Today, there are enough charges down. You may not believe that, or you may not think that, but that's you not being properly informed. It's got nothing to do with the fact that the reality on the ground is there are enough charges. Should there be more? Absolutely. Will this market grow at a rate that we may start to fall behind on charging? Maybe. Yeah. I think we're all aware of this. We're all aware of it. I think anybody in this game is aware that there is going to come a growth time where the charging operators or the charging suppliers might fall behind the vehicles. But right now, we're ahead.
Okay.
So if this was a race, charging installations are winning. When knowing that we think this is going to happen, we're all making strategic decisions on our side. I can't tell you all of those decisions, but I can assure you that we are very aware that we may fall behind, and we have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and probably almost down to Z on the plans. There are strategies and there are ways of looking. I would expect that all the charge point suppliers are doing that, or the charge point owners, network operators are doing that. So they will, without doubt, be a point at which we'll be looking and saying, right, we're moving to our plan B, and we're going to grow because we can see the rate at which change is happening.
Yeah.
Some of those things may already be kicking in, and you may or may not see them over the next 2 or 3 months in the market as the dynamics start to change.
So it is a case of I'll pick up on the lazy human story because I quite like that. I think I wonder who was it? Someone said you need to hire lazy people in your organization because they don't want to do anything. So they'll just do the barest minimum to get stuff done, but they'll do it efficiently. So you get high efficiency, low productivity, but high efficiency makes a better organization, which is an interesting point of view. I'm not entirely sure I'm sold on it, but it's an interesting point of view nonetheless. The point of the matter is that I think that there's still we had this chat with someone else the other day where I was saying, you know, what you and I know about EVs and charging infrastructure, we've forgotten more than the average person is yet to learn, because we are that far behind. You mentioned 5 to 6 years behind where we started off in your early predictions, probably a year behind now. I think in terms of understanding and certainly the questions one sees and comments one sees on podcasts like these, on posts you make on LinkedIn, displays a level of ignorance, and it is ignorance. It's not willful ignorance. It's not stupidity. Sure. It's just ignorance on behalf of a huge number of consumers who are wanting to see 1,000 chargers in place on every 100 meters down the road before they'll commit to charging. In fact, you said it would be one of the great inventions of grid cars is the cardboard charger that you just plug on the side of the road. People can see there's a charger. They'll never use it, but it will change their perception that
to manage perceptions there. Exactly. Yeah. And exactly, I think, that. You know, there's a couple of things you have to consider. In South Africa, less than 1% of vehicles, well, let's say 2 months ago when I last looked at the numbers, less than 1% of new vehicles being sold are electric.
Correct.
Based on that, I would think that any responsible OEM, no names mentioned, but any responsible OEM should then spend 1% of their budget on marketing EV and 99% on continue to mark hybrid and other vehicles that they sell, because that would be the ratio.
Plug-ins.
Maybe if you wanted to advance it a little bit, you could double the budget on EV. So 2% of your budget goes to EVs and 98% on this.
Yeah.
So when you hit in the market, and we talk about LinkedIn articles, when we hit the market, what's going to be the majority of the articles? The majority of the articles are going to by far not be EV. So the perception again to the rest of the world is that this is what it is. I think the big change, and as I said to you, we're moving quicker now, and I do believe we're going to see a radical uptake in electric vehicles, more radical than anybody is doing. You asked what that implication is, and before you'd finished your sentence, I started thinking implication to us as a country, and that to me is the bigger concern.
Sure.
So what's going to happen is as that rate changes, we're going to see a much, much bigger adoption, and that bigger adoption implies bigger disruption. So not necessarily just for us as the charge point suppliers or charge point operators, it's going to be a disruption in jobs, in technology, in innovation. It's going to be all of those things are going to be impacted. I recently, to a particular industry sector in a meeting said that one third of all of your business, of all of you and your competitors will be out of business in 5 years.
5 years.
In 5 years. And he said,
that's quick.
He said, well, but why would I say that? I said, because you can't move as a tech, you're not moving with where the technology is going. Mm. And that's what disruption does. Mm. So we sit here thinking, oh, it's okay, it'll change. No, the quicker it changes, the more impact it has within our communities. So you could pick any type of business. If you people, you here, let's pick on you. If you were not interviewing not? People that do talk about electric vehicles and electric vehicle technology because you believed it wasn't going to happen, okay? And you stuck to your guns and you did all the other interviews but never interviewed somebody on electric, and I know you do. So
We only interview electric, in fact, so we're committed. But I would be out of business in 5 years' time is what you're saying.
I'm saying is one third of all of the podcast people that are doing this type of work in the next 5 years would be out of business because they didn't move quick enough.
Yeah.
They will realize in 2 or 3 years' time, oh, we should have done electric. And they will start moving, but they would not have reputation at that stage because your podcast would be the one that everybody's listening to. They would have lost their momentum
from your lips.
But we will see this in every single sector. We'll see this in insurance, we'll see it in banking, we're going to see it in the automotive industry, people who are not selling electric cars yet. We'll see it in services, in every aspect of the business. We will see a severe risk to the businesses that have not transitioned massively in fleet. So fleet operators, fleet companies, logistics companies, they have one big advantage. They can pivot quicker than what normal things say. So they can make a much later decision and still succeed.
Yeah.
But there will be a huge amount of pressure. You can imagine if you were a logistics company and you'd moved across to electric and now an OEM transporting vehicles from Johannesburg down to Durban decides to use the electric transporters and not the petrol ones because it helps with their taxes and CO2s. And suddenly, they sign a new five-year contract.
A few 5% cheaper or 3% cheaper or whatever the case may be.
And they sign that new contract, and other players are now not going to get to that contract because it was signed because of the fact that you're electric and the other player didn't have it. What?
So this is exactly it. I mean, this is I think, what Alec Hogg calls second-level thinking, and I enjoy it. This is tremendous. Exciting stuff. That's a hell of a bombshell to drop in the middle of an interview. I'm pleased that you did because it prompts thinking around a direction that may not be obvious. It's perfectly obvious to you and I sitting here, but it may not be obvious to our viewers. And it's something that I think is incredibly powerful and important to discuss.
Yeah.
And Winston, we could be here forever. We could actually be here forever, but I don't have time. So we're going to have to get you back on the show to carry on this discussion.
We can do that
because there's a huge amount we didn't even get to in this thing. But thank you for your time. Thank you for these insights.
Absolute pleasure.
I'm going to have to go away and think about quite a lot of stuff now, which I always get when I talk to you. So I thoroughly enjoy that. Thank you very much for coming
in. It's an absolute pleasure.
Great.